This is Matt Wells at UN News. Establishing goodwill between Greek and Turkish Cypriots through activities that involve children, women and the elderly, Blue Helmets with the UN Peacekeeping Force in Cyprus, or UNFACYP, are working towards a bizonal, bicommunal, federated state to ensure a future where the whole of the island can live in a safe and secure environment, says Force Commander Major General Cheryl Pierce. The mission was established in 1964 to prevent fighting between the two communities on the Mediterranean island, and in the absence of a political settlement, it continues to maintain ceasefire lines and a buffer zone. Just ahead of the International Day of Peacekeepers, marked on Wednesday, Major General Pierce spoke to Julia Dean from the UN Information Centre in Australia.
Well, for us in Cyprus, we're made up of just over 1,000 personnel. We're one of the smallest peacekeeping missions. And of that, just over 800 are military, for which I'm the force commander. I work to the special representative for the Secretary General. And together we nuanced in that I ensure the security and stability in the buffer zone and to enable a long-lasting political solution to be identified. And when I talk about what is the buffer zone, it's really a nuanced and complex strip of land. It covers 180 kilometres from west to east. It's got 7 official crossing points. It's probably no wider than a street's width in some parts, and that's in Nicosia, right up to 7 kilometres in other areas. We're very much focused on protecting civilians through protecting peace. And we do that in a number of certainly in different ways. And the first one for me as a force commander and also as a mission as a whole through dialogue and engagement, which is actually my main effort as a force commander. We're an unarmed force and we have a militarized opposing forces north and south. On the north, we have the Turkish mainland army and the Turkish Cypriot security forces. And on the southern side, we have the Greek Cypriot National Guard. But the island is actually quite a militarized island. I have a strong engagement plan with the commanders of the opposing forces, and we meet nearly every 6 weeks. And then this is mirrored again by my commanders on the ground across the sectors. It really is our tool to ensure that we de-escalate the tensions that are there. And we are the only way. The two sides don't communicate with each other. We facilitate all the information from north to south and south to north. So that engagement plan is significant.
And that depends highly on trust, doesn't it?
Yes. Trust. We talk about that every time we meet. And we talk about from a military, really a code of ethics when we talk about mutual respect, trust, impartiality, transparency. And I really focus on that for both sides because it is what we do as a military that separates it from the political. We've got to be very careful to keep the divide separate. Otherwise, we can get caught in the political environment, which undermines the trust and impartiality on the military side. So that's sort of the key piece. And that happens right down to the lowest level. And, you know, we have a mandate. We have to report violations. And so that engagement, we need to really call on when we have these violations. And violations, what I talk about, they could be overmanning of their checkpoints, they could be move forwards into the buffer zone, they could be escalation with weapons. There's a number of different activities that either side could do that would create a violation, and then we report that up through to New York on a daily basis, and it starts to build into the Secretary General's report. And we have a mandate renewal every 6 months. So the actions of the opposing forces gets captured and reported, which then leads into the political dialogue and the opportunities for the sides to try and identify a way going forward.
What about the civilian populations? Does the military have a liaison with the civilians as well?
Look, we do. Talk about the protection side first. As we talked about, maintain security and stability in order to return to normal conditions. Our actual buffer zone here on the island is not a sterile buffer zone like between North and South Korea. It's actually used for farming, and some of it's permitted. We do it through a permit system, but a majority is not permitted farming, which creates escalations. And for us, it's to try to diffuse that. But in regard to the actual physical protection, we escort, we have pilgrimages coming into the buffer zone. They seek to do these pilgrimages back to their mosques and churches to hold religious services on a regular basis. And for that, we escort them. We escort them in and we provide that support to them. But when I talk about supporting civilians, we have a lot of bi-communal and a lot of activities that occur in the buffer zone about establishing the goodwill between the Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots in the intent of trying to work towards a bi-zonal, bi-communal federated state. And for that to occur, we have to maintain and really work towards creating a bottom-up swell of bi-communal activities. And for that, we're actively involved in and creating a sense of a safe and secure environment for which for those to occur. And they occur in the buffer zone quite regularly. They're well planned. It's done with us as a force. We have the UMPO, the police, but also we have civilian staff who do the facilitation with the municipalities north and south to coordinate. The diplomatic community also actively gets involved and sponsors a lot of these activities.
These are like activities with children.
So they'd be sports and children's activities, fun days for the very young and for their parents, and then through to mainly through sport on a lot of the school. But now there's a lot to do with science and STEM and space and educational activities. And then we also focus on the next generation, really trying to get the younger community working together, because the curriculum on both sides is actually adjusted to meet their own narrative. And so coming together through bi-communal, allowing them to engage, provides an environment where it's not by what is said, but it's by the actions and working with the opposite side. The elderly, we do a lot with the elderly. But also we do a lot with the women, giving them a voice and trying to generate opportunities where they can be a voice for change. And they do a lot through women's walks. We get together and encourage them. The UN can't be leading. It's about facilitating both sides to find ideas and ways forward.
Do you have an example of what inspires you with the people that you work with as peacekeepers?
Look, I do. You know, what inspires me that my force that's here, you know, they've trained in their own National Army, Air Force or Navy, and they've trained in, to serve their country, and then they've been selected by their country to represent the UN. And it's as we come together as an international community to serve the UN and to support the outcomes in Cyprus to ensure that they have a future where the whole of the island can live in a safe and secure environment as Cypriots as a whole.
And of course the peacekeeping day is a day to reflect on those who have fallen. What are your professional and personal reflections on this?
Very similar to that of what inspires me about my force is that you train all of your career to serve your country, and then you're selected by your country to serve the UN, which is greater than a national outcome. It's a global response to conflicts around the globe, where we are coming together to support the country that we're in. And to represent the UN is a real privilege, and I certainly don't take it lightly. And the environments that we work in, and this is, you know, towards those that have fallen, the environments that we work in are complex. And for those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice, my heart goes out to their families. You know, we train for this environment and we understand the risks. It's the families that are left. And you know, a lot of people think the UN is only is less than war. The environment that we work in is benign. It's not. It is complex. It is risky. And we continue to focus on trying to create stable environments for the host nation. Also continue to work. The UN is working in Action for Peacekeeping. And that's where member states and missions. And my focus is on the continual, you know, professionalization of the force, the training, the environment in which we work in. And to lead by example with good command. And that's to ensure that we reduce the deaths where possible in missions. There'll always be the environments we're in, but make sure that there are no unnecessary deaths through poor training or our actions. But inherently, you know, we serve our country, we serve the UN, and the environments we're in are risky and complex.